The following programming is sponsored by Amendment 16 Limited. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group.
Hey, Ken Krawchuk here, and welcome to episode 145 of the Pennsylvania Project. As you may know, here at the Pennsylvania Project, our vision is a better Pennsylvania. To achieve that vision, our mission is to boldly showcase the political, cultural, and environmental challenges facing contemporary Pennsylvania, and to relentlessly, vigorously, and methodically pursue correct solutions. But more important than solving the problem correctly is to solve the correct problem. And let's hope to do it in a polite, friendly manner. Along those lines, we have a good guy, bad guy episode planned for today. And like all episodes of the Pennsylvania Project, it's divided into three parts. You, them, and me. Part one is all about you, your questions, your opinions, your solutions, your whatevers. And rather than a call-in format, we utilize an email-in format. So if you have something to say, you can always drop us a line at pennsylvaniaproject.com. Today for the you part, we have our latest regular feature, Unscripted Cohorts, where I get hit cold with a question from our cohort. We also have part two of a listener question left over from last episode. We just didn't get around to the whole thing. After the you part comes part two, the them part, where each episode we host a guest to help showcase the political, cultural, and or environmental issues facing Pennsylvania. For the third episode in a row, believe it or not, our guest today is heavy-duty cultural, but with a little dash of the apolitical, I should put it. She is Heather Blakesley, advocate for the arts, sustainability, and social justice here in Pennsylvania. After that comes the me portion of the Pennsylvania Project, where it will be my turn. Your caster, Ken Krawchuk. I'll be focusing on some particular issue that really sticks in my craw, pun intended. And today, finally, I'm going to be ranting about the leadership of the Libertarian Party of Pennsylvania, but we'll see, you never know. And throughout the show, as is our long-established custom, we'll be featuring a Pennsylvania Toastmaster to serve as narrator to read our live commercials. Today's narrator is making his first appearance on the Pennsylvania Project. He is Dave Horvath, member of some unnamed club in Cleveland, Ohio, even though he hails here from Pennsylvania. Go figure. Regardless, welcome to the Pennsylvania Project, Dave.
Thank you.
I got a quick question for you. What do you like about being a Toastmaster?
The ability to practice the public speaking and the skills, because I do a lot of it for computer conferences.
Mm-hmm. What do you speak at conferences?
Oh, let's see. I've spoken on programming languages like SAS and Python.
SAS?
Yes.
SAS is still around?
SAS is still around. It's still pretty big. I've even spoken on a British author, Neville Shute, at a conference in Oxford, England.
Good grief. Don't talk about Fortran?
No, Fortran.
I wouldn't either. Fortran, I started with Fortran for a long time ago. Anyway, welcome to the Pennsylvania Project, sir.
Thank you.
Glad to have you here. We also have a less clandestine Toastmaster with us, according to another one of our ancient customs. She is here to giggle, read, and help respond to whatever comes into our mailbag and join in discussions with our guest. It's a role that we call cohort, and today's cohort is making her 11th appearance on the Pennsylvania Project. She is no less than distinguished Toastmaster Bridget Velasca, president of the Sub and Surface Toastmasters Club in Camden County. Welcome back to the Pennsylvania Project.
Thanks, Ken. I'm excited to be back in 2022. I can't believe it's been a while since I've been here, but here we are in a new year.
Yes. No, it's the same old year. It depends how you look at it. I start counting from summer to summer.
There you go.
I have to start off asking about your teenage daughter, Olivia.
Yes.
She was here, what, 5 or 6 episodes ago, mm-hmm. and she sang for 132, it was, episode 132. Mm-hmm. She sang for us the Pennsylvania Anthem.
Mm-hmm.
I never even knew we had one.
She did an excellent job, didn't she?
She did a kick butt job.
Yeah. Have you been playing it since?
I have, and I've been spreading it around my political circles, especially the one where I rewrote the lyrics. Pennsylvania, Pennsylvania, terrible is your shame. I forget what the words are exactly. But she was also going to try out for the school play.
She was, and she did. Their play is The Addams Family.
Yeah.
Haddon Heights High School in New Jersey. And she got the lead, or one of the leads, Morticia Addams.
Whoa.
So,
congratulations.
And my other daughter's in it, too. She's a plug. She's also in the chorus and a dancer and an ancestor. So I'm real excited for my kids to have something positive to look forward to. For all of our teens, they need that.
I agree. And you don't sing, do you?
I cannot carry a tune in a bucket. I mean, I am horrible. I wasn't allowed in grade school choir. That's how bad.
Oh, I mean, man.
Seriously. I mean, I think it's mean to do to a child, but I was seriously scarred by that. I wanted to get out of class. I mean, I was a wheedler and a sneaker from way back. I was thinking, I can try this out. I mean, I think I thought I was good singing in the shower and all that. Back in that day, I was one of six kids and actually sang in the tub. We didn't even have a shower. Seriously, I'm not lying.
And people are holding your head underwater, right?
Probably.
I don't know. I got to sing at the Philadelphia Folk Festival.
Once. You did?
Yeah, I did.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, on the camp stage. Not the camp stage, the front porch stage.
Wow, and I'm impressed.
I did two songs there.
Wow, and you have your camper shirt
on
today.
I'm wearing
today.
My Folk Festival Happy Camper shirt. I should turn around.
Show the Facebook audience. He's a happy camper.
A
banjo. I love that.
Yes.
And I didn't know you were such a big folk fan. I told you I just rolled off the board of the Philadelphia Folk Festival.
I know. So. Thank you for your service.
You are quite welcome.
I'm telling you. How many festivals? Well, we could talk about this later. I got a note here. It's not your turn yet. But it's not our turn either. Why don't we get rolling as quickly as I can?
Yes.
You have a question.
I do.
By the way, the Libertarian Party convention is coming up in just about 2 months, and that's where my name will be placed into nomination as governor candidate for Pennsylvania in 2022.
Oh my goodness! You heard it here.
I didn't say I was going to accept it.
Oh, where's your wife?
She has to let you accept it or not.
I don't know.
That's my standard answer. People say, "You're going to run?" I said, "Talk to my wife and stand, but stand back."
You know, there's definitely a person behind every fastest known time or major success, right? There's usually somebody behind you. I was going to ask you a different question, a political question, but I was reading part of your bio online, and something I didn't quite know about you is that you're a big Appalachian Trail hiker.
Yes.
And I did not know that, and I have been so fired up about the Appalachian Trail because I just went to a conference in San Antonio in December and heard Jennifer Farr Davis speak. I don't know if you've heard of her, but she did the fastest known FKT time for women in 2009. Uh-huh. And then she did the all-time fastest known time in 2011 with her husband supporting her along the way with food and clean clothes and all that you need for that. I mean, 47 miles a day from 4 a.m. to 12 p.m.
That's crazy.
12 a.m. I mean, that's ridiculous.
Why are you out in the forest? I met one guy, Warren was his name.
Yes. He was one of her trainers. The big guy, Warren, who's a professor at Liberty University.
I met him on the trail.
Whoa, you got to read this book, Pursuit of Endurance.
He went all the way from south to north and then north back, and turned around and went back south.
Right.
And he's running across people and say, I will see you in June in New York State. You know, I will see you in April in North Carolina.
Yeah, she talks about him in her book.
He's crazy. I met him.
That's unbelievable.
On the
trail. I was going to ask you, there's 229 miles of trail about in Pennsylvania. And how do you think Pennsylvania is doing keeping up with their Appalachian Trail and trail maintenance and what we're doing with this cool natural resource? I think we could all kind of come to the middle and talk about something like that.
There's a lot I could say about the Appalachian Trail, but let me start off by saying I'm going out there tomorrow.
Oh, yeah, cool.
And what is it? It's cold this weekend. It's gone down to... I'm going to be up around Pine Grove, toward Harrisburg Way.
Wow!
Just for the weekend, I'm going to get out in the cold and the snow. It's going to snow on Sunday.
Oh my goodness!
But to adjust your question, Pennsylvania doesn't do anything for the Appalachian Trail. Virtually nothing, I should say. It's all maintained by volunteers.
Right.
Now some of it goes across public land. It goes through some of the state parks, like Pine Grove State Park and Caledonia State Park, some of the state forests. Weiser State Forest and everything like that. So Pennsylvania does give us the ability to do that. They also allow us to camp in state game lands as long as we're more than 100 feet off the trail and more than 100 feet from any source of water. Mm-hmm. But that's it. And also the cops tend not to hassle you on the trail. Mm-hmm. I've done the trail from roughly Bear Mountain, New York, down to Shenandoah's. It's about almost 500 miles of trail I've got so far. Mm-hmm. And you go into other states, and the cops hassle you. They just
really?
Hassle. Yep, I've had Like, we're stopped on a beer break, and the cop comes up. Ranger says, "Pour that beer out." And the guy
I'm with,
he goes, "Sure." And he chugged the beer. Cop says, "No, I mean on the ground." He's like, "Well, I'm not going to waste good beer." So Jersey's terrible when it comes to the police on the trail. Mm. New Hampshire, we went up with the family. We took packs and everything like that. We camped at, it's in the Presidential Range. I'll think of the name of the park in a moment. But we're all set to go. And I was talking to the ranger. He says, "Yeah, you help yourself, you know, just make sure that you make it to the lean-to." I says, "Well, how far is the lean-to?" He says, "Oh, it's 20 miles. I says, "We're only going to talk about going about 4 or 5 miles and then, you know, stop, do another 4 or 5. "Oh, no, you can't do that. It's against the law. We have trail runners at night. You get a $500 fine. Oh, come off it.
They have trail runners running the trail at night so that if you're sleeping on the side of the trail, they yell at you and say, "Get up and keep walking?"
Yeah.
What are they going to do, stand behind you to see if you're going to make it, not keel over in the woods?
Yes. And I said, "What's the deal?" He says, "Well, there are endangered plants up there." I said, "Why don't you say there's a corridor 50 feet wide where no endangered plants are allowed to grow?"
Right.
Remove the trail away from them.
You know? Right. Or those, like, lean-tos that you can rent or those spaces.
No, they're free.
Yeah.
Lean-tos.
Or reserve. You have to reserve them, I think.
Oh, yeah. In New Hampshire, you do. Not in Pennsylvania.
Okay, that's good.
I don't stay at the lean-tos because there's no wood supply.
Mm-hmm.
Especially going out this weekend. You know, if it's going down in the single digits, you're going to want a fire big enough that you can see from space. I love the Appalachian Trail. And I got a lot of stories I could tell about that, but we won't be able to get around to anything.
Right. Well, thank you for telling us a little bit about it. And I encourage people's curiosity to get piqued by reading Pursuit of Endurance.
And just for reference, it stretches from the Delaware Water Gap, north of Allentown Easton, and it goes north from there, north of Harrisburg, and then it swings to the south. It goes through Gettysburg and down south out of the state through there. And it's beautiful. And my favorite part is the Pennsylvania side of the Delaware Water Gap. The first time I was there, you come to an overlook, you're couple thousand feet in the air, and I saw an airplane fly under me. I could read the numbers off the top of his wings. Anyway, like I said, I can talk all the time. Let's get to the listener question. We got to do that, otherwise we're not going to happen.
This is from Stan, correct?
Yeah, good old Stan.
Stan from Lycoming County, Pennsylvania.
Pretty country.
He is asking about the vaccine. Are the vaccine mandates, he says the vaccine mandates are racist. When only 12% of the black community is vaccinated, and the rest of Philadelphia is over 50%. It's a racist mandate. It's disproportionately oppressive towards blacks, but it can still be unjust for everyone. It would be similar to making a law against black curly hair. It would affect a lot of people, but disproportionately affect the black community. He says, do the math. 1.6 million people in Philadelphia, 59% are vaxxed, 43.6% are black, and 10% of the vaxxed are black. What do you have to say about that?
Well, as I'm sure some of the listeners have already noted, this is the same Stan question from last week. But given my long-winded, very opinionated cohort who joined us last week, we only got through half of Stan's answer. And I had the time to discredit all of his unsourced statistics. And what I did was I got numbers from the CDC, from the city of Philadelphia, a dose of common sense thrown in there. And I was able to successfully put in some proper numbers. But what I didn't have time to cover was why Stan's surprising decision to play the race card.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I want to know why. Why play the race card at all? I mean, there are more than enough reasons why people would choose not to get vaccinated without resorting to race. None of which are anybody's business anyway. And as far as I'm concerned, if somebody does not want to get vaccinated, they don't, period. But with these forced vaccinations, these mandates, we know people are being thrown out of work for no good reason, and then businesses complain there's a labor shortage. I mean, who's to blame for that, huh? Mm-hmm. Well, last episode, my cohort argued that unvaccinated people spread the virus. And I countered that, generally speaking, the only people who are susceptible to being harmed by the unvaccinated are other unvaccinated people, all of whom have chosen to accept the risk of not being vaccinated. So a bunch of self-selecting people. But Stan, he sidestepped all those common sense argument and decided to play the race card. I have no idea why. Why would he want to do that? Especially when he cited no sources for his racial statistics. I can imagine. You know, when I ran for governor of Pennsylvania, the last thing I would ever consider doing was to make stuff up, especially about race. Certainly it would kill my credibility. Didn't do stands much good either, not in my mind. And, you know, whenever somebody plays the race card, I'm reminded of that great philosopher, Jim Carrey. Mm-hmm. Back in the early 90s, I was visiting my in-laws, and they had a TV that they never turned off. Oh, it was very annoying. But I caught a little bit of an interview with Jim Carrey. They were talking about some comedy show he did called In Living Color, which I had never heard of. Apparently, the entire cast was black, except for Carrey. And he got asked, what's it like to be the only white guy on the show? And Carrey gave the interviewer what for. I mean, he gave him both barrels. He said, what the hell are you talking about race for? This is the 1990s, not the 1890s. I thought we were a society, moved beyond that. And he went on and on and on and on. And he didn't let up. And I'm not a Jim Carrey fan. I don't like him at all. I've heard him described as two stooges short of a load. I agree. Although I did like the Truman Show. I thought it was pretty cool. But although I'm not a fan of the man, I am a fan of his race relations. I think he's absolutely right. Who cares? Somebody's black, green, blue, whatever. Who cares if it's a woman or a man, or a woman who used to be a man, or who is or wasn't either or both or neither? Who cares? Unless you're relying on an emotional argument to stir up some class warfare or something, which is never a good idea. But getting back on point here, are vaccination mandates racist? No. That's because they hurt everyone, regardless of race. And if you look at my statistics from last episode, it hurts blacks more than whites when you look at Pennsylvania as a whole, and whites more than blacks if you look in Philadelphia. And to me, the vaccination mandates are yet another sign of an out-of-control, tyrannical government. I'm going on and on. I should stop. Bridget, what do you think about all this? I have a lot more to say about it. I'm looking at the clock. I should
stop. I know. Down. Well, I think that I agree with you. I think, you know, people have specific reasons about not being vaxxed. Why do you think it is if there's a lower percentage of African-Americans not being blacks? Why do you think that is?
Well, it's not the case. If you look at Pennsylvania, 65% of blacks are vaccinated in Pennsylvania, and it's only like 45% of whites. Mm-hmm. I forget what the exact numbers are, but it's the other way around.
So it's the other way around, and Stan has his statistics wrong.
Correct. His statistics are wrong. And they're unsourced. I don't know how to debunk them.
There you go. Well, then we can't count that, right? So we have to be careful, and I think that we always have to watch the sources and ask more questions. I think that's critical, and I think that's what you're doing. And I think it stirs up people when we don't ask that question right out of the bag. Where'd you get that information from? Can you explain to me more about your position, because I don't really understand it, instead of going right on the defensive, which I think is what causes more of our divide.
Yeah, I learned it the hard way. I was on national television, and I mentioned about how, well, I'm not going to get into the whole thing. the question was about gun safety.
Right.
And found that if a woman resists an attacker, she's twice as likely to be seriously injured. But if she resists with a handgun, she's half as likely to be seriously injured. And from that, I drew the conclusion that handguns are a girl's best friend. And I forgot to say that it came from John Lott's wonderful book, More Guns, Less Crime. And I had a reporter from the Harrisburg Patriot News who just reamed me for it. You know, unsourced statistics and who knows what. Anyway. Well, I'm going to stop shooting off my mouth on that stuff. Anyway, on that shotful note, that's going to have to do it for the U portion of episode 145 of the Pennsylvania Project. We're going to pause for this information. And when we return, we will be meeting with today's guest, Heather Blakeslee, advocate for the arts, sustainability, and social justice here in Pennsylvania.
Did you hear the latest news? Almost two-thirds of all federal spending now goes to pay for the welfare state. More than $2.2 trillion, which just about equals federal income. Do you realize what that means? Virtually all tax revenue is now being consumed by the welfare state. But how do we rein in that runaway spending before it destroys America? The answer? The separation of society and state. That's the premise of the new novel, Atlas Snubbed, an unsanctioned parody sequel to Ayn Rand's Atlas Shrugged. Atlas Snubbed presents a workable alternative to the welfare state as we know it. Atlas Snubbed expertly extends Rand's epic story of a looter's world snubbed by the men of the mind, bringing to life a crumbling post-apocalyptic world where no one need ask who is John Galt, because now they know. Atlas Snubbed. Available at all online bookstores or through atlassnubbed.com. Read it today before it's too late.
Here's an interesting question. What do you think of these three ideas? Number one, people have at all times an inalienable right to alter, reform, or abolish their government as they think proper. Number two, juries shall have the right to determine the law as well as the facts. Number three, the right of the citizens to bear arms in defense of themselves and the state shall not be questioned. Do those words sound like they're something taken from a Hollywood political thriller? They're not. They're all direct quotes from Article 1 of the Pennsylvania Constitution. Everyone's heard of the United States Constitution, but have you ever heard of the Pennsylvania Constitution? Have you ever read it? But most importantly, was it ever taught to you in school? If you're like virtually all Pennsylvanians, the answer are likely to be no, no, and no. Well, it's long past time we change those answers to yes, yes, and yes. And you have a crucial part to play in making that come to pass. As you know, we here at the Pennsylvania Project are all about solutions. So we've authored a petition demanding that the Pennsylvania Constitution be taught to all of our children. If you believe it's important for our children to know how our state government works, head over to our website, PennsylvaniaProject.com, and add your name to the growing list of signers. And every time we accumulate another batch of signatures, we'll send a copy of the petition to the governor, the Pennsylvania Board of Education, and each and every one of the 500 school districts in Pennsylvania, asking them right now to start teaching our children the Pennsylvania Constitution. So please sign the petition at PennsylvaniaProject.com. The alternative is yet another generation that has never heard of, let alone read, the Pennsylvania Constitution. And people wonder why no one votes anymore.
Always gets me. Hey, Ken Krawchuk here, and welcome to the Them portion of episode 145 of the Pennsylvania Project, where we host a guest to help showcase the political, cultural, and or environmental issues facing Pennsylvania. Today's guest, as I said, is heavy-duty cultural with a dash of the apolitical. She is Heather Blakesley, volunteer coordinator for Braver Angels in Pennsylvania. And Braver Angels is a nonpartisan nonprofit with a presence in all 50 states and about 1,500 members here in Pennsylvania. According to their website, Braver Angels seeks to depolarize American politics. And boy, do they got their work cut out for them. Heather is also publisher and editor of Root Quarterly, a printed journal of art and ideas based in Philadelphia, and billed as being one part magazine, one part collaborative art project, and one part social experiment. And in general, Heather calls herself an advocate for the arts, sustainability, and social justice here in Pennsylvania. She is originally from Bloomsburg, right up by one of my favorite places in all Pennsylvania, Knoebels Amusement Park, but I digress.
Fantastic. Yeah.
Welcome to the Pennsylvania Project, Heather.
Thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
Well, you're something of a renaissance lady, aren't you? You got your finger in a lot of pies there.
Well, that's the positive way to describe it. You could also call me a, you know, jack of all trades and master at none, I suppose. But I'd prefer the renaissance appellation.
Well, I don't know. You brought some of these Root Quarterlies, and I was looking at something. How could you say that you're a master of none? That's some beautiful stuff.
Well, thank you very much. That's one of the things that we hope to do is introduce a little beauty into people's lives. Amid all of this political polarization and people being angry at each other all the time. Art.
What do you mean angry?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Art is one of the things that I think brings people together and shows us the best of ourselves instead of the worst.
I agree. And I also just found out that you're also one of the integral people from the Philadelphia Folk Festival.
Yeah, I just did a tour of duty on the Philadelphia Folk Festival board for the last 3 years, and you can imagine how challenging that was during COVID with everything shut down and the stages silent. It's been really rough for everybody in the entertainment and music business, and nonprofits who are working to support musicians and artists have really had their work cut out for them the last couple of years.
Is there going to be a fest this year?
We'll see. I had my last board meeting in December, just a couple of weeks ago, and I'm really grateful to all my colleagues who are, you know, staying on the board for their terms and the new folks who are coming on, and they're looking at all of the, you know, can they get a permit? They're looking at negotiation with the you know, the folks who own the farm up there at Old Pool Farm.
Godshalls.
Yeah, the Godshalls, exactly. So we'll see, you know, but they would love to. It, you know, that's what they're hoping for. But it's really, it's hard to plan something that big, knowing that you have to put investments into it that you might not get back. And if, you know, that's been the whole game, this risk, you know, management for the last couple of years, it's tough.
When I used to go to the board meetings, the Fest ran about $1 million budget. It's probably more than that now. I'm not sure. Well, it's zero now, right?
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And especially someplace like that where you've got to make, you know, improvements every year to the land in order to make it safe for everybody. It's not nothing to make a big festival happen.
You know, it really caused a little bit of stir in the Krawchuk household because I always get my kids tickets to the Fest, all camping, all festival camping tickets, and they're not selling them.
No, and I really don't know exactly what's going to go on like that. My favorite Fest memory actually is being there and not planning to stay overnight.
We can't do that.
And that, I know, it was just a silly, silly thing, right? And so we the band gets there. It was the first year that we played there. We played in the cultural tent. I proposed a session called Lizzie Borden Played Her Axe. Women Take the Lead in Murder Ballads. So it was, I wrote two new songs for that, one of which is going to be on the new Sweetbriar Rose record, Black Eyed Susan, coming out. And we were like, you know, no, we'll stay, you know. And somebody had an extra tent, and somebody had an extra sleeping bag. It was the coldest night of my life. My bass player Shane actually slept inside the soft case for his bass as a sleeping bag. He snugged himself up right there.
But there are people, they got fires going all night long.
Well, that's the thing though, man. We were at the, we were, you know, different fire. You were talking about being on the camp stage and that kind of thing. We were, yeah, we were in front of the fires for a long time. And as soon as we left the fire, it was so cold. Oh my God.
It varies from year to year. I've been going to the Fest since 1972 was my first one.
That's amazing.
And I only missed a couple of them when the kids were in diapers. It was back in, like, I missed 79, 80, and 81. And after that, we were back again.
Yeah, it's hallowed ground for a lot of people.
We did episode 19 of the Pennsylvania Project from the Fest.
Oh, nice.
Where I was just stopping people on the road. Hey, you want to be on the radio?
I didn't know that. Yeah. There you go. That was very cool.
Yeah. And we had one lady, she said, she was in the parking lot listening to the episode, and she sat there crying.
Aww.
Because she was so touched by listening to people say what they love about Fest.
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing. You know, arts and culture is a really integral part of who we all are. It's just so much of what makes us human, and when we don't get enough of it, it's like not breathing air and not drinking water. So I think a lot of people don't understand or don't think about how important it is to keep it in our lives.
It's true. And we raised our kids at the Fest. Our grandkids are going to the Fest.
Absolutely. I mean, all of it too, like visual art, you know, looking at your magazine, and I'm an artist as a hobby. I'm a oil painter.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I do oil painting. Yeah. I've done acrylics and pastels and things. And we just went to the art museum for the first time in a long time, my family, over the holiday. And it's exciting just to, like, you know, take it in and see the sculptures and just enjoy what people accomplish. I just think it's very soothing. And then also, my husband doesn't paint. My daughters are singers, but going to the theater, you know, having lost all that for a year, you know, just not hearing the theater, that has been a huge bummer to our date night.
We had
theater subscriptions for the Walnut Street and a local theater.
Oh, man, I've been there too.
We've done like 11 plays a year, my husband and I, regularly. So when you get
people don't think about the fact that a lot of these traditions that we have about, like, gathering to have big music, festivals and going to the theater. I mean, it's ritual, right? Mm-hmm. It's community ritual.
That's right.
And it used to have a more religious meeting often, and that has become more secularized and open to more people. But that's, you know, again, it's like this people coming together to enjoy something together. Or, you know, we just did a third time that we did it, a fundraiser at Old Swedes Church. It's one of the oldest churches in Pennsylvania, or the oldest church in Pennsylvania. And all of the local folk and Americana folks get together with the sextons there, Jim and Paula Minacci, who are fantastic. They do all the community programming. And we do an Oh Brother, Where Art Thou tribute. And it's one of the highlights of the year because you're in this beautiful church and you're in a place that was built to be acoustically beautiful and sound. We have one microphone up at the front that people are coming up on, and it's beautiful and soul recharging, and we need to be in rooms together.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there just needs to be that FaceTime. I don't think isolating people is going to solve this problem, and it's not going to solve what's going on in our country.
You would have come to our in-person Toastmasters meeting.
I know, right?
Well, that's actually one of the things that, you know, you mentioned, Ken, the three kind of component parts that we have for the magazine, and one of it was easily understandable. You've got a magazine in front of you. You're like, all right, this is cool. And the second part is that it's a collaborative art project. So this is, you know, people that we know and writers from, you know, all over the region, but really focused on people that we have relationships with. And the third part was a social experiment, which was, you know, if we build it, will they come? And we really wanted to do a lot of in-person live event series and have in-person conversations, especially about the things that are more difficult to talk about, that are emotional for a lot of people. And COVID just killed all of our plans around that. And we're really looking forward to being able to talk with one another in rooms again.
That's not the way I phrase it. I usually phrase it, the government response to the pandemic is what has killed things. I'm your caster, Ken Krawchuk, and you're listening to episode 145 of The Pennsylvania Project. We'll be right back after this information with more from Heather Blakeslee, our advocate for the arts, sustainability, and social justice.
Are you a small business owner, always looking for referrals? Do you have a streamlined approach to generating new referrals? Contact Steve Worley to learn the fast, easy way to generate new referrals. Steven has an all-inclusive system that will help you generate an extra 5 to 10 customers per week without spending a single dollar on ads. You won't have to create a website, have pictures taken, or write a single ad. Steven will take the headaches out of the process. Contact him at stephenwerley.com. That's Steven with a V, W-E-R-L-E-Y.com.
Hey, distinguished Toastmaster, that's DTM in an acronym talk in Toastmasters. Bridget Falaska here, cohort on the Pennsylvania Project. You know, it's easy to find a high-paying job, at least for some people it is. Employers are begging for competent leaders who know how to communicate effectively. But do those words describe you? Competent leader communicates effectively? If not, or even if they do, you may want to consider joining Toastmasters. The mission of Toastmasters is to provide a supportive experience for learning communication and leadership skills. But does it really work? Hey, look at me! I joined Toastmasters, and now I'm on the radio! So turn your life around like I have. Visit Toastmasters.org and contact a club near you. Visitors are always welcome. And be sure to mention you heard it on the Pennsylvania Project radio show. The future is anxiously awaiting competent leaders who know how to communicate effectively. You can be that leader. It all starts at Toastmasters.org. That's right, Toastmasters.org.
Are you a country music fan and tired of hearing the same sounds recycled by different artists? Ray Raddick is a breath of fresh air for country music. After opening for Miranda Lambert and Brett Young, her EP is taking country music by storm. A combination of beautifully written songs combined with well-executed music makes her a must-listen. You can find her on all streaming platforms and social medias. That's Ray, with an E, to electrify your heart. Learn more about RayRaddick.com. That's R-A-E. RADICK.com.
Hey, Ken Krawchuk here, and we are back with episode 145 of the Pennsylvania Project with Heather Blakeslee, our advocate for the arts, sustainability, and social justice. I have to ask, are you a Toastmaster?
I am not.
Oh, you ought to. Make it. You might get on the radio sometime if that happens.
Well, I think I'm already on the radio.
There you go. And you're from Pennsylvania?
I am from Pennsylvania. I grew up in Bloomsburg.
Oh, that's right.
The only town in Pennsylvania. It's the only place that's incorporated as a town. It's on the signs when you come in.
Yes.
Why is that?
I have no idea.
They're grandfathered from the previous constitutions going all the way back. Like, for example, Rockledge, just outside of Philadelphia, is a borough. It's the smallest borough in Pennsylvania, but it's too small to be a borough, but mm-hmm. it got grandfathered in.
It was a wonderful place to grow up. I really, and you know,
it's beautiful. The mountains,
beautiful.
Knoebels.
Knoebels is there. I mean, what more could you want? Yeah. No, it was a wonderful place to grow up. It was, you know, my father worked at the Susquehanna Power Plant. He was the assistant superintendent at the nuclear power plant there, and my brothers and sisters and I had a really good time running around in the woods all the time and playing in the creek and going snow, you know, playing in the snow and getting wet in our canoes, and it was just fantastic.
Wow. We still do that too.
Oh, yeah.
My wife and I will take the canoe, load it up with camping equipment, and camp out on an island, just the two of us.
Yeah, we had romantic. Wonderful memories of growing up there.
Yeah, we still do it. You know, I'm going to pull it. We did a lot of talking about the artsy stuff, mm-hmm. but you're also with Braver Angels, mm-hmm. trying to defuse the political debates in the world, in Pennsylvania and everything. And not only that, you are one of two co-coordinators. There's a blue coordinator. You're the blue coordinator. And
yes.
There's a red one out in Pittsburgh.
That's correct. Lindy Ferris, my cohort out there.
Uh-huh. How do you do this? I mean, people are so incensed about political stuff. I mean, last episode, the question I got from my cohort was about the big insurrection. I said, what insurrection? Oh, yeah, the Capitol got stormed. I said, wait a minute, this is the Pennsylvania Project. we don't talk about Washington.
Yeah.
But how do you do it? What do you do to these people?
Well, you know, Bravery Angels is a really interesting organization, and I found them through the work of John Wood Jr., who's someone I have a great bit of respect for. He's a black Republican out in California, and he's run for office before, and he's got some really great, interesting perspectives both on politics and on racial divides, and I enjoyed his writing, a lot of the podcasts that I had seen him on, and so I checked Bravery Angels out, and it turns out that it is, I think, going to be one of the organizations that really helps us kind of put the brakes on the road that we're traveling on right now toward further polarization, hating other people simply because they belong to a different political party.
Uh-huh.
You know, growing up in Bloomsburg, we didn't even know, really, you know, the adults around us. They didn't talk about things in the way that they do now. There weren't as many lawn signs. It was just like we got to be kids and they got to be, you know, adults and running the town. And I think the main thing that they do is take, and I know this is going to sound funny to a lot of people, but the methodology that they use is actually a marriage counseling methodology, believe it or not, which is sort of where we are right now, right? It's like you've got all these people and they have to live in the same state, and we're one of the most heterogeneous, you know, countries in the world. We got so many different kinds of people with different kinds of beliefs and ideologies and frameworks that they're coming to. So
even just here in Pennsylvania, that's true.
Yeah, exactly. And so the way that they approach, you know, for instance, a red-blue workshop, which will have an equal number of people who lean one way or the other. I should also say that there are a ton of libertarians who are involved in this group.
Well, then why don't you have a gold coordinator?
Well, you know,
because gold is the color of the Libertarian Party.
Because they're not representative of political parties per se. They never, ever talk about political parties per se.
Well, we're for the freedom motion.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know if you've ever seen the world's smallest political quiz, but there is not, the political spectrum is not left-right.
No, it's not.
It's actually a diamond.
Mm-hmm.
And it's graded on one side by personal freedom,
yep.
the other side by economic freedom.
Mm-hmm.
And people on the left tend to believe in a high degree of personal freedom and a low degree of economic freedom. People on the right are the opposite, a high degree of economic freedom but a low degree of personal freedom.
Mm-hmm.
But we libertarians believe in freedom all the time.
Yeah, and when I take political tests like that in a kind of quadrant, I'm usually a left libertarian is how I end up.
Uh-huh.
But I don't really, you know, but you know, back to the Braver Angels stuff, I don't really think that thinking about it even in a political framework is helpful, because really what it's doing is trying to restore trust among people who live in the same places and
uh-huh.
in the same neighborhoods. So the way that they do that is they'll bring people in who have different political affiliations. Some of them don't affiliate with any party at all. Some of them feel like they're homeless politically.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I personally sort of feel like that a little bit, that I have been a Democrat my whole life, but I don't even know what that means anymore. So
I don't either.
Yeah,
or Republican.
You know, exactly. So, to me, and this is also really the mission of Root Quarterly as well, it's, you know, we have to learn to talk with one another again. And we have to learn how to listen.
Uh-huh.
We have to learn how to listen. And so what Braver Angels does is it takes people, puts them in the same room together, not with the goal not with the goal of convincing the other side of your point or your point of view or your policy prescription or whatever it is. It's actually the exact opposite. It's to go in with the intention of understanding the other side. So if you and I were, you know, on different places about something, we would go into that conversation with me wanting to ask you good faith questions about your positions and why you came to be where you were. And it would be your job to do the same thing. And so in doing that, you often find common ground and you build trust, which is the most important thing.
You know, I don't think you and I are on different sides.
We might not be, but
I do this all the time. Mm-hmm. I'll go into a room. I've run for governor 3 times now. I've been all over the state. I've addressed literally thousands of people. Been on national television more times than I could count. But I bring people together with the same question. Do you believe you have the right to live your life your way, provided you respect the rights and property of others?
I personally do.
You're a libertarian.
Oh, my God.
That's what it means
to be a
libertarian.
What will I tell my parents?
Your life your way as long as you respect others. Mm-hmm. I'll go anywhere, and I'll ask that question, and every hand in the room goes up. I've been in schools where that's one thing I love about running for public office. I get into the schools and I can actually affect the minds of children. But teachers tend not to like me. And I'll go in there and I'll ask that question. How many of you believe you have the right to live your life your own way, provided you respect others? Heather, every hand goes up and the teacher just glare at me. And then I hold up my Pennsylvania Constitution. I say, how many of you ever read this? Silence. I go, is this mic on? Hello? Hello? And I've had teachers, like, you know, waving their hand at me. Come on, move on, move on, move on. But that's how I approach these things. Mm-hmm. And it's very, very rare that I find somebody who disagrees with that.
Mm-hmm.
Not that they're out there, but I'd say it's 1 out of 100.
Yeah. And I think also in working with Bravery Angels, like, so many people are disheartened, dispirited. You know, they don't have a lot of hope for things being different
than they
are right now. Almost always after people have gone through a workshop or they've gone, you know, online to view a Braver Angels debate, they find other people who feel like they do and who want to bring the temperature down on conversations, who want to have different conversations, who want to be able to have whatever conversation they want about whatever difficult issue they want, as long as they're, you know, being respectful with one another. And
you sound more like a libertarian with every word,
lady. Well, I don't think that's a libertarian perspective. I think that's a humanist perspective.
I'm not disagreeing with you.
Yeah. So it's
the golden rule.
And a lot of people want to continue to slap political labels on people and on things. And I think Bravery Angels is really around removing those labels and seeing them as people again.
Uh-huh.
I'm not about trying to get more people on my team. In fact, you know, we're trying to
Get them off the other team,
exactly.
not necessarily on.
And I think, you know, one of the goals that we have is to find more people who are more conservative leaning to get involved with the organization, and also more working class people as well, which describes a lot of my family in Pennsylvania. And I really think that, you know, if we break down some of these barriers that we have and we stop having these low resolution views of one another that are just, frankly, caricatures that don't mean anything.
I agree.
We have to get to that place. And one hopeful thing for me, or out of the many working with that organization, is when I went through a Red Blue workshop during the summer, the Pennsylvanians that I was there with came away with 3 different things that we agreed on. So no matter where they were with, you know, their political affiliation or if they didn't have one, they agreed on 3 things.
And same 3 things?
Same 3 things. One was that we don't feel like our politicians represent us.
Everybody thinks that.
Right? Which is unfortunate since we're supposed to be living in a representative democracy.
Yeah.
The second thing was that we were all terrified of the consolidation of power between big tech and government, and sometimes the kind of collusion between those two.
Yep.
And we also all felt like Pennsylvania could be a model for depolarization, because we felt like there were enough level-headed people who just wanted the state to thrive, environmentally, economically. People have good jobs, great schools, those kinds of things, clean environment for you to, you know, camp and hike in.
Uh-huh.
A lot of people just want those things. And so, you know, I don't know how to fix the completely polarized, broken system that we're in, other than to start pulling people out of it and creating your own stuff.
There you go.
Which is why I started the magazine as well. You know, I wanted a place where I was in charge of what we got to say and not say and how we did it.
If I were king of the forest.
In your workshops that you're doing, are there some particular workshops where you've had some politicians attend that have said how they've, you don't have to name anybody, but say how they've changed from going through that process, and not from a political perspective, because you're not going to name them. But
Well, it's interesting that you asked that question, actually, because they are Braver Angels as a national organization is about to launch a Braver Politics initiative. So they're going to tweak the Red Blue workshops a little bit to make it more comfortable for them to be able to speak freely, because obviously, you know, Ken, you know, this is somebody who has run for office before. People will ding you for anything.
Amen. They go out of their way. You know, Heather, I'm looking at the clock, and it always goes by fast, you know, and I wish we had more time to do this. But what I always like to do is turn the microphone over to our guest and let you talk about anything you want. There's like 2-3 million people within the footprint of WWDB here, and people listen on podcasts.
Yeah.
What do they need to know?
Well, I would say if you're interested in making Pennsylvania a national model in both depolarization space, check out braverangels.org. If you're an arts and culture lover, or you're into interesting and difficult ideas sometimes, if you love print and you love beauty and you love art, go to rootquarterly.com. We're subscriber only. You can only get us in print because we're slow media.
Woo! I love it.
And you can also check out heatherblakesley.com if you want to find more about me. But, you know, subscribe to the magazine. Get involved as a volunteer with Braver Angels, and we'll make the state a better place.
Be a better, braver Pennsylvania.
Exactly.
All right. That's going to have to wrap it up for the then portion of episode 145 of the Pennsylvania Project. My thanks once again to our guest, Heather Blakesley, fellow Fester, our advocate for the arts, sustainability, and social justice here in Pennsylvania. We're going to pause for this information, and when we return, I am going to be ranting about the leadership of the Libertarian Party of Pennsylvania.
The following is a commercial announcement.
Hey, Dave, how's it going?
Bad, Ken. Really bad.
Why? What's the matter?
Our friends at the Infernal Revenue Service paid me a personal visit the other day.
The Infernal Revenue Service?
Yep. Call them for what they are. They sent these two big brutes to the house, scared us half to death.
I bet. What do they want?
Money. Lots of it. Remember that part-time gig I took last summer?
Oh, yeah. You were raking in some big bucks.
Yeah. And all those big bucks went straight into my personal bank account. It turns out the IRS doesn't like that. And I didn't file any of the right forms or pay nearly enough in taxes. So they want it all now. Right now. Plus penalties and interest.
Ouch. It sounds like you should have called Amendment 16.
Hey, it's the damn 16th Amendment that got me into this predicament in the first place.
No. Amendment 16. The invoicing service. They'll invoice your client for the hours and expenses you report to them. And when your client pays them, they pay you, minus all required state and federal taxes. It's that easy. One call does it all. And they'll even have an accountant do your personal taxes for you come April 15th.
And they take care of all the taxes? All the forms?
Yep. And they can pass along certain tax breaks, too.
Man, I wish I knew about Amendment 16 sooner. Where can I find them?
On the web, of course, at amendment16.com, with 16 spelled out. That's Amendment, SIXTEEN.com. One call does it all. Hey, Ken Krawchuk here, and welcome to the me portion of episode 145 of the Pennsylvania Project, where I get to rant a bit about something that really sticks in my craw. Today, it's the leadership of the Libertarian Party of Pennsylvania. And let me say right off the bat, this isn't just sour grapes. Let the facts be submitted to a candid world, and you can judge for yourself. But the problem here is I don't know where to begin. There are so many ways that our state party leadership is so out of control. So let me start off gently with some of the content from the latest newsletter of our state party, written by no less a personage than the newsletter editor himself, John Waldenberger. Now let's set aside his mischaracterizations of people's intent, which he possibly cannot know, and jump right to the juicy part. He wrote, and I quote, "Leading the way in dishonesty and dilatory tactics is Mark Bazzacco," unquote. You see what I mean? This isn't just sour grapes. This guy made a public personal attack on the integrity of the man who ran for state party chair last year, and incidentally, who's also the executive producer here at the Pennsylvania Project. It's home, doesn't it? It appeared to me that sour grapes are all on John's side. Hey, he just walked in the door. He's tickling me on the back. Anyway, makes me wonder a problem John is solving. Well, we'll do more on John's libelous-sounding statements in a minute. Next up is a less libelously-sounding yet slimy article from the self-styled founder of the infamous Cathedral Caucus, a guy named Aaron Rinesmith. You may recall how I ranted about the Cathedral Caucus back in episode 132, but please don't visit their Facebook page. As I said back then, to quote the character Francisco D'Anconia from Ayn Rand's Atlas Shrugged, he said, "It's like tearing the lid off hell and letting men see it." I'm telling you, I can't believe all the god-awful trolling that I saw out there. And most all of it is aimed against upstanding libertarians. I mean, I wallowed through all that filth looking for some rational argument why they hated certain libertarians, but I couldn't find it. All I could find were ad hominem attacks and hateful memes about party members, sweet little old me included. They're even making fun of people who object to Waldenberger's nasty accusations against Mark. Talk about sour grapes, and they're not mine. If you talk to those people, they say the sole purpose of the Cathedral Caucus is to oppose a hostile takeover of the party. But it looks like they are the only hostile ones. Anyway, getting back on point here, it's obvious that the leadership of the Pennsylvania Party condones this sort of libelous-sounding slime in the official party newsletter. That's because they, according to the party policy manual, have veto power over any article. Why didn't they use it, I wonder? Why would they permit those kind of hatred, untruths, that kind of slime? Beats me. I don't know. Maybe they're catering to the slime vote for an upcoming convention. But fortunately for party harmony, their slime may not last. Every year, our state party elects 5 members to the state party's judicial committee, the JC for sure it's called. And according to our party bylaws, quote, "The Judicial Committee shall be the final body of appeal in all matters regarding interpretation of the Constitution, bylaws, rules, or resolutions of the party." And me, I was lucky enough to get elected to the Judicial Committee for what? I think it's the 10th time. I've lost count. And several of those terms, I served as the chair of the JC. I'm telling you, being on the JC is one of the best fits for me and for many reasons. Well, first, I'm a past chair of the Libertarian Party of Pennsylvania. 2 terms, too. So I know it's involved in running the party. Second, I'm a professional parliamentarian. I know the rules for running any sort of formal organization. And third, I've been an IT professional for over 50 years, so I know the importance of speaking with precision, especially to an overly literal computer, or to a radio audience for that matter, and such as when discussing possibly libelous newsletters. Lots of other reasons in support of my being on the JC, such as my legal background, my public speaking ability, a whole bunch more. I won't go into it all, but suffice it to say that when you roll them all together, I can be best described by the name that I have given myself, the Libertarian Lorax, because I speak for the rules. And what better place for a Libertarian Lorax than being a member of the Judicial Committee? Well, it seems to me that some people don't believe that, including too many of our party leaders. Nor apparently do they believe the words in our party bylaws when it comes to the function of the Judicial Committee. Namely, we are the final body of appeal in all matters regarding party rules. But the saddest part is that among the party leaders who don't believe that, one of them is none other than the state party chair herself, Jennifer Moore. Let me explain. Recently, a party member asked the Judicial Committee for clarification of rules how our conventions are run. But hey, that's our job, interpreting party rules, right? The questions were a direct result of the crazy shenanigans we saw at the most disastrous convention in Pennsylvania Libertarian Party history held last May. We covered the sordid details of that convention back in episode 112, if you're interested, but brace yourself if you're going to listen to it. I wouldn't recommend it. Well, to make a long story short, we on the Judicial Committee ruled that all those convention shenanigans were indeed against party rules. And since the Judicial Committee is the final body of appeal, that settles it, period. Except in the mind of our esteemed chair, Jennifer. And not just in her mind, it pours out of her fingers, too. She recently posted, and I quote, "I do not recognize the authority of the Judicial Committee to rule on hypotheticals. I will not entertain such rulings or take any action on them," unquote. I beg your pardon? Not recognize the authority of the Judicial Committee when the bylaws clearly state that the JC is the final body when it comes to interpretation of party rules? A member asked us for an interpretation, and we gave it, and she says she's going to ignore it? I mean, who made her the final body of appeal to interpret the rules? Or has the Libertarian Party suddenly become the Libertarian Party? You see what I mean about our party leadership being out of control? When the chair of the state party openly declares she's going to violate the plain meaning of the party meaning of the party rules? Well, we on the JAC aren't too thrilled about that either, as you might guess. Neither are a lot of other people, especially those who were publicly slimed in our official party newsletter. Not to mention people who just don't like slime. But bottom line here is that it would appear Ms. Moore may soon be facing the Judicial Committee's opinion once again, and this time not about anything hypothetical, but rather for the very non-hypothetical sin of the chair blatantly, publicly violating party rules. Clearly, this will be a job for the Libertarian Lorax, and I am ready for it. Hey, it's all in a day's work of defending the Libertarian Party from hostile takeovers, defending it from foreign and domestic hostile takeovers. On that prophecy, that's going to wrap it up for episode 145 of the Pennsylvania Project. What do you think about our rogue state party chair or our rogue newsletter editor? What do you think of our advocate for the arts, sustainability, and social justice, Heather Blakesley, or anything somewhat Pennsylvania-related? If you have something to say, we'd love to hear from you. You can contact us at PennsylvaniaProject.com right after you sign our education petition, that is. And you can hear us there, too, as well as on iTunes, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and a plethora of other popular podcast providers. Today's episode is courtesy of Amendment 16 Limited and produced live in the studios of WWDB Radio, broadcasting in Philadelphia at 860 on the AM dial every Monday at 3 p.m., among other times. And now on WPEN 97.5 FM HD2 in Burlington, New Jersey. Each episode is also released as a podcast every Monday at PennsylvaniaProject.com. Our webmaster is Stephen Worley. Our featured Toastmaster cohort is distinguished Toastmaster Bridget Velasca. Featured Toastmaster narrator David Horvath. Official bartender Tom Kehoe, still. Keyboard wizard Joe the Pag. Radio producer Mike Cherko, executive producer Mark Bizzacco, who finally showed up. Welcome, Mark. You dishonest person, you. And me, your caster, Ken Kralchuk. Thanks for joining us. And remember, more important than solving the problem correctly is to solve the correct problem, even if it means you have to peacefully prevent a hostile takeover.